This is the spongy moth version attacking the juicy fruit. I'm really sorry to say that sometimes the moth has it more right than the apple or the apple of everyone else's eye. This is the story. Seymour Hersh has never published an investigation, an investigative report on Russia since Russia was created out of the Soviet Union, 1991. He did one book back in the 1980s on the Soviet Air Force shootdown of Korean Airlines 007. Otherwise, Hersh has focused, when he was a reporter at AP, when he was a reporter at the New York Times, when he was a reporter at the New Yorker, on principally internal domestic spying in the United States, and on the My Lai incident, which launched his reputation during the Vietnam War, and then subsequently the Israel nuclear weaponry and the wars in the Middle East. His incompetence in Russia is demonstrated in the report and in the subsequent interviews he's given to his friends and chorus of supporters. Some of them announce that they play golf with him. Some of them announce they play tennis with him. Some of them announce that they were cub reporters or stringers for the New York Times when he was a reporter working for this editor or that editor. It's inside Beltway journalistic self-congratulation, which has blinded many people who ought to know better as investigative reporters to the mistakes Hersh himself has made, and has encouraged them all to demonstrate the one thing they all seem to share, which is less a dedication to truth and more a desire to go home to Big Mama, Alma Mater, the New York Times. Hersh has repeatedly referred in his interviews to the brightness and brilliance of New York Times reporters, et cetera, et cetera. And he's dismayed and upset, as they all are, that the mainstream media are ignoring the story. Well, let's go to the story, shall we?
All right. Wait, before we get there, John, but to be fair to Hersh now, his story is not about Russia. It's about America. I mean, yes, it's the Russian pipeline, majority-owned Russian pipeline, but he's writing about America, and his métier, as you mentioned, is the what he calls the intelligence community or the spook spy craft and all that. So just to be fair to him, you know, but at any rate, so yeah.
Well, it is about Russia. It is about a war against Russia. And Hersh's principal objective is to show that President Biden of the United States, Secretary of State Blinken, and Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland, and presidential advisor, President Biden's security advisor, Jake Sullivan, were the perpetrators of an act of war in a larger war, which Hersh goes to some pains to point out, is aimed at Russian gas weaponization. He accepts that as a doctrine. It's false. He goes to the trouble of blaming Putin, again, personally, for launching a very bad war. I'm using his terms. I haven't got them right in front of me. Folks can go to the website and see the exact words and the exact references to where Hersh has said these things. So he is aiming at war. He can't pronounce the Maidan properly, which indicates that his knowledge of the war against Russia, the US war, the NATO war, the European war, the world war against Russia started this episode back in 2014, with the putsch that removed the elected president of the Ukraine. If he can't pronounce the name of the square, little though that detail is, it's a telling detail. He hasn't heard, he hasn't studied, he hasn't checked sources who pronounce the name of the square near which Deputy Prime Minister of Canada, Chrystia Freeland, has her own apartment. If they can't pronounce the Maidan and call it the Maiden, they aren't on top of the Russian Ukrainian war properly. But
well, to be fair, John, and I'll say this, you know, somebody who has mangled pronunciation on radio during interviews for a very long time, that I'll give him the benefit of a doubt that during a radio interview that he, you know, he said the wrong thing or whatever, or pronounced something incorrectly. I mean, I can forgive him that and not say that he doesn't know anything about Russia. And he also says that the source of the pipeline is from northeastern Russia, a northeastern Russian port, where clearly it's the northwest. But and he writes that. He didn't say that. It's in the article. But his article is titled "How America Took Out the Nord Stream Pipeline." So it's about, you know, who blew this thing up, the war and all that, you know, and the whys of it is another thing altogether. But he's making a straight out claim that now America did this and this is how they did it. And that's isn't it what his piece is about?
Yes and no. The open secret, and it's no secret.
Yeah.
That the U.S. has been behind a campaign to stop Nord Stream 2 from being laid as a pipeline and then operated in Germany. That's been clear. The year before, the U.S. and Polish governments got together secretly to attempt to sabotage the laying of the pipe as the vessel, the pipe-laying vessel, was threatened by so-called Polish fishing boats. That was the first operation, which I then published as the Bornem Bash back in April of the year before the strike against the detonation of bombs and the strike against both pipelines under the sea between Bornem and the Polish and German borders, the coastlines. It's no secret that the U.S. was involved in the campaign to sanction and stop the operation of the pipeline and compel Germany to stop the licensing, which would have opened the valves and let the gas fully filling Nord Stream 2 at the time start to flow into Germany. That's the open part of the secret. What happened over the year preceding was the involvement of all of the states, Germany, Poland, Denmark, which owns Bornem Island, Sweden, and the NATO states, including Britain and the Ukraine. They're all involved in the war against Russia. This was one of the operations of the war against Russia. And the Russian line, the Russian announcement, and the evidence indicates that Anglo-Saxons conducted the operation. By Anglo-Saxons, the Russian side has included the British, the United States, and other powers. In Hirsch's initial report, the one that launched the Hirsch story, he refers to a group of U.S. Navy divers and Norwegian military, Navy and Secret Service associates, and as the operators of the placement of explosive on the pipelines, three of which detonated properly, a fourth of which did not. He claims it was an all-American operation. But if you read carefully what he says, and then what he says in an interview, he admits that there were other states, not simply Norway. Why does he insist on this was a big U.S. operation? And that's the second story. That's the motive of the source. It's the reason that Hirsch is so convinced of his own story. He wishes to minimize the role of all the other powers. Do you want to know why? Do we want to know why? Is it relevant? Well, if all we're concerned about is that the United States led this operation, announced it in advance, then participated in the blow, the strike, the action, if that's all we're interested in, Hirsch has done a service. If, however, we want to look carefully at what Hirsch is not saying, error of omission, error of commission, then we come to something that's kind of serious, in an entirely different way. And that's the role of the CIA behind Hirsch, this story.
Yeah, and this is where it gets into sort of there's the famous or familiar term, limited hangout, that maybe not everybody is familiar with. Is this what you're talking about? Hirsch acting as a kind of, well, first, could you say what a limited hangout is? And then if you think this is what Hirsch's role is in this?
Limited hangout, I'm old enough to remember limited hangout was the expression first popularized during the attempt by President Nixon to ward off the Watergate scandal that eventually led to his resignation. The limited hangout is, if you Google it or Wikipedia look at it, is considered a term of espionage work, spy work, spy talk. It means that in order to disguise or keep concealed a central truth, you let out some little ones that look credible but cause the viewer, the audience, your target, a parliament, for example, a law court, that divert their attention away from the central truth, which you hope to conceal and protect. Limited hangout is limited because you only let a little bit of the truth out. Hangout is is a disguise. A limited hangout, Hirsch has himself indulged in. When you look at his interviews or listen to them, and I've tried to listen to them very carefully with giving him all the benefit of all the doubt. What he says as a limited hangout when asked, for example, about the role of Denmark and Sweden, he says they knew what was going on, but the Norwegians didn't want to brief them in detail, and that he is allowing that the Danes and the Swedes also participated and had knowing participation in operation, but he's not interested in asking them to comment. Instead, he says, I telephoned the Norwegian embassy in Washington, and I didn't get a reply. This is a nonsense. No professional journalist would ever dare to report such a dead-end attempt to confirm anything, let alone the Norwegian involvement. But there's more to than limited hangout. Hirsch has also been asked in one of the interviews to comment directly on the Russian statement that the British were involved. To go back a bit, roughly 60 seconds after the detonation, there is convincing evidence that Elizabeth Truss, then the Prime Minister of England, SMS'd Secretary of State Blinken to say, it's done. I haven't got the words exactly in front of me, but I believe the message was, it's done. How did she know 60 seconds after the event? The evidence, and it's not the only evidence, is that the British were deeply involved in training, preparation, and planning of this subsea operation. When asked directly, Hirsch was asked about the British role. He first said, no, it was an American operation. Then he admitted the British were the first in the water. He admitted that the British had greater skill underwater in this sort of operation than the U.S. Navy divers of NAVSEA Command. He was contradicting himself in writing and contradicting himself in the interview itself.
Well, is it possible, though, John, that when he said that, he was talking about they were the first in the water? Because his story is that these charges were set and there was a remote device attached to it so that it could be triggered remotely, that they were perhaps the first in the water to witness what had happened, not necessarily that they laid the charges, but that they were acting as a bird dog to see that this thing went off as planned. And then they, you know, they told Truss and Truss did what she did. Is that a possibility?
Yes, certainly it's a possibility. So is the other one, that the British and the Ukrainian, using Ukrainian divers, planted the explosives weeks or months in June undercover, June 2022, undercover of the so-called Baltic exercise known as Baltops, planted the explosives in such a way as they could be triggered remotely at a later date. It's possible, your scenario is possible, Chris. The alternative scenario is possible that the bird dogs in this operation, operationally, were the United States. There's some evidence that that Hirsch's account of a Norwegian aircraft overflying to send the signal to detonate, that aircraft was not a Norwegian one, it was a US one, and it flew over after the detonation. All of these possibilities are genuinely worth investigating.
Well, why then would Truss feel that it was that she had to inform the Americans of something
claim
that they
credit.
Would have already
easy,
known?
Easy claim credit.
That's her high five then, and hey, it's done, hooray. Not like, hey, I'm letting you know that it's done kind of a thing.
It's a high five for a prime minister very new in office.
And very eager to please, too, apparently. Again, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with John Helmer. John's a journalist and author. He is the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. He's the author of Skripal in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Jackal's Wedding, American Power, Arab Revolt, and his latest is Australian Fascism, How It Destroyed the Courts. We're talking about, well, it's the big issue now, but John was on top of it pretty early on, dissecting the famous American reporter Seymour Hersh, and with his article, What's Wrong with the Hersh Report on the Nord Stream Attacks. So John, one thing about Seymour Hersh's writings is we mentioned the term limited hangout, which is sort of a spycrafty kind of term, although it's become popularized now. But in his writings, Hersh uses a lot of this. Not only that, he says we a lot, like, well, we knew we had to do this, and we knew, you know, like he's on the team, you know, which is journalism 101. You don't make yourself the story, and you don't take sides. You know, and I'm really surprised somebody of his experience would make two of mistakes that any fledgling coming out of a J school would be loath to make. And I'm not saying that unfairly. I mean, that's just what he does, and I think it's a mistake on his part. But there's another term that he uses, and it comes up in your article too, when he talks about sanctions in the context of who is responsible for this. And he says that he talks about sanctions, and he says Nord Stream 2 has been sanctioned by Germany. It's been stopped by your country, not internationally. And this was something he said in an interview with a German reporter. And I'm curious to know, it just seemed rather strange to me. Does that make any sense?
Let's be fair to journalism. Let's be fair to Hersh. Journalism is a collective operation, unlike a single book in which the author gets to say, thanks to this one, thanks to that one. Journalism is an ongoing, short-term, cumulative job of bringing out the truth piece by piece. And the great advantage of internet publishing is that you can add to, subtract, correct, fix, make a mistake, apologize, etc., etc., collectively on the internet, in response to readers and audience and other professionals. Hersh insists that he's the star, that the New York Times is his alma mater, the star. I read it as a dumb mistake. Everybody should understand, if they've studied this project, Hersh says it was fact-checked over and over at New Yorker standard. His idea of fact-checking is the New Yorker. That's ridiculous now. Under Remnick as editor, under the Gessens, Masha and Keith, the New Yorker is as much a propaganda mouth organ as the New York Times or the Financial Times or the Murdoch Press. With the Murdoch Press, Hersh criticizes. I took it as a dumb mistake, meaning Hirsch knew too little about the history of the sanctions war since 2014, since MH17 was shot down. He knows too little to understand that the attempt to stop Nord Stream started as economic sanctions imposed by the United States and by the European Union, of which Germany was a member, and Germany complied. But if you're saying the way to read what he said was he was echoing a source, but which brings us back to the point, who is Hirsch's source? It's not important who his name is. We're not trying to get behind the blind attribution. We are trying to get behind, and this is something Hirsch ought to be able to respond to, and if not him, his journalistic chorus of support in London and in Washington. What is the role of the CIA in providing this analysis? Because Hirsch quotes them as saying they were part of the process of the operation. They loyally discharged the president's order, but they were, his words, horrified, appalled. And then out comes a CIA analysis, which Hirsch seems to endorse, that this attack on Germany impoverishes Germany, makes Germans cold, and will ultimately lead to I'm quoting from Hirsch, the rise of right-wing anti-Americanism in Europe. That's Hirsch talking from a source that's not a naval source. It's not a Norwegian diver. It's not somebody from a NAVSEA diver. Hirsch keeps calling them miners. That's a slip. From Panama City in Florida. This is the CIA talking. Now, there's no proof, and one doesn't. There is simply circumstantial evidence that better than the John Kerry standard, that Hirsch, either knowingly or Hirsch unwittingly, is running a story that's aimed at preserving U.S. influence and power in Europe without the detractions of this operation. And the blame for that should fall politically. The blame he points to is Biden, Blinken, Newland, and Sullivan. And that could very well mean a kind of deep state scheme to replace them in the run-up to the 2024 presidential election. Let's call it, for want of a better term, a deep state plot for the presidential election of the United States. And that would more deeply trouble the journalism profession, because it makes it an accomplice of yet another presidential campaign plot.
Well, and those people you mentioned, Sullivan and Newland and Blinken, were, and Biden himself and his son, by extension, were all involved at the time of the Maidan Square coup that overthrew the democratically elected government in place at the time and began Ukraine's long descent over these last many years into war and disaster. You write about in another piece, and this accompanies your interview on or your back and forth with George Eliason, who's in Donetsk, War of the Worlds on TNT Radio, as a piece, Seymour Hirsch defends CIA in plot to attack Biden re-election. Hirsch also attacks investigative journalists with his own plot to feed them crumbs. Well, he's also, John, on his Substack site, come out with an apologia, or, well, maybe that's unfair, but he's come out with a piece called The Crap on the Wall, and he begins by saying, well, this is in response to all the critics that he has, not necessarily, I think probably more the kind of criticism that you've been leveling about his methods than those allies of Biden that are just trying to bring him down on his personality or whatever. It's behind a paywall, so it's the crap on the paywall because I didn't pay. So I only read the first paragraph of it. But when you talk about Hirsch saying that he was feeding crumbs to journalists. It sounds kind of condescending for one thing, but what does he mean by that? And what is this another limited, or another way of employing a limited hangout? Because it sounded a lot to me like the way the CIA treat journalists, where they give them a few little crumbs and lead them into a direction where that they want them to go.
I think you're right. I'll just quote you his words. I've got behind the paywall Johnson's Russia list last Saturday, republished the entire crap on the wall article. The problem is, of course, whose crap is on whose wall in this particular story. But perhaps listeners have had enough of listening to journalists polishing their own asses. What Seymour Hersh actually said was in the interview with his German interviewer, Fabian Scheidler, we left enough breadcrumbs for them to be able to write, as a couple already have, oh, this couldn't have happened because, and then he goes on a bit and concludes, so we took care of them. That is more than condescending. It reflects an attitude that government officials have towards journalists and how easy it is to deceive them. Let me make a confession here, Chris. I, too, have been a U.S. government official, and not only the U.S. government. And I can tell you, it, the higher you go in a government, not just the U.S. government, the more contempt, and I use the word advisedly, you have for so-called leading journalists of your capital. Why? Because as government officials, you have to study the papers. You have to listen to all the options. You have to argue with your friends, your associates, your factional adversaries. You engage in a process of testing the evidence materially, economically, in budget terms, and in political terms, versus your parliament. The U.S. Congress is the obvious target in the United States. But as an official of the U.S. government, I can tell you I had engagement with one of the most famous legendary journalists in the Washington Post at the time, now dead, David Broder, when I was a U.S. Office of Management and Budget official, and pointing out to David, whom I'd known for years before he became legendary and I became an official, to try to point out that he'd made a mistake about how the U.S. budget system works. And he reacted so negatively to what I thought was goodwill and with a well-intentioned advice. He hung up on me and we never spoke again. From that little episode, I promised myself I'll never ring up a journalist I know to try to advise them that they need to read the papers and not necessarily listen to a single source to run a story that they think will capture, with their byline, the front page. That kind of star journalism is what government officials rely on. That's what the breadcrumbs are intended to feed the hamsters. They're hamsters. That's what government officials think of journalists, because they're either too untrained to understand a corporate balance sheet or something as complex as the United States budget. They rely instead on a voice, on a source. And they that's the way all government officials that I've experienced in my lifetime of government service and journalism think of journalists. I tried to improve on matters when I ran a university graduate course in teaching investigative journalism to start the novices with the understanding that they've got two problems. One is their proprietors will sack them if they get too close to a truth the proprietor doesn't like. And second, their sources in government will lie to them because they think they're lazy and stupid and untrained. Between those two hard rocks, journalism, investigative journalism, truth journalism, has a hard, hard life to run, and it rarely produces legends and heroism. But that's the stuff of which money is made. The star system that Hersh believes in, the New York Times star system is totally discreditable and discredited.
John, we're fast out of time. Now, you can go to John's website, johnhelmer.net, and order his book, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, and his other books as well. For now, John, thanks a lot for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I'll look forward to The Spongy Moth next.